saving money on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes. Whether you're pouring a walkway, concrete slab, or setting a post, we have the right product at the best price to complete your project. Shop our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time Match Day. My name's Taylor Payne and it's the final home game of a monstrous season for Newcastle United as they take on desperate West Ham. George and Chris will be with you to discuss the match in a little bit, but first, here's some action.
Chance. Barnes has been filling his boots recently. A goal to Mara! It means a lot to Baltimore, but it could mean even more for Nuno and West Ham. Barnes, Guimaraes. Early ball for Asula. The flag has stayed down. It's Asula! It's two!
Trippier starts it off around the corner. It's all one-touch stuff. It's beautiful football with an end result.
Asula. This is Willock. Back to Asula! And that should take care of that. Castellanos! Well, they needed something special, West Ham, and they have it. That is an almighty strike from Tati Castellanos.
A goal out of absolutely nowhere.
Swung in by Juf. Glanced away. Castellanos! Tati Castellanos so close to grabbing a second for himself and a second for West Ham.
Well, we'd have certainly been in for a grandstand finish had this gone in.
So it is all over at St James's Park anyway. It's felt like the season's gone on for absolutely... I don't feel like it's ever not been this season. And yet when you get to the end of it, it always feels a bit strange. It feels emotional. There's a lot of emotion today around the stadium.
I was surprised that you didn't actually come to tears at one stage. I mean, I did expect that. But
I didn't. Yeah, you're right. I didn't. Well, part of my job today for The Athletic was to actually to watch West Ham. So I spent a lot of the game just in a rage about how absolutely terrible they were. Anyway, we'll come on to that. But yes, it was a very emotional day at St James's. Lots of farewells, whether for the summer or in the case of people like Kieran Trippier, Emil Kraft, probably others, a bit more of a long-term goodbye. But where should we start, Chris? A remarkably stress-free day. I mean, Newcastle United enjoyed themselves. I can't really think of the last time that actually happened.
No, because it's the same scoreline as the victory over Brighton, but obviously the second half of that was really torture, and it was only in a lot of time that Newcastle actually got the third goal, whereas on this occasion, goal 1-0 up after 15 minutes, 2-0 up after 19, and basically when the first goal went in, it was almost game over, but certainly when the second went in, it was, and then when the third went in, it was sort of comfortable, even if West Ham scored quite soon afterwards. And so, yeah, there hasn't been enough of that. You can applaud the side for that. I think it also shows the frustration, though, maybe, of what this side could and should have been doing. They're 11th in the table after this win. The chances of Europe are absolutely tiny. So there is the tiniest possibility that could scrape into the UEFA Conference League position. But they won't, and probably to their benefit in some ways, although a lot of people at the club would like them to have gone to Europe from a revenue perspective, I think that really a reset almost is required next season. There's going to be a big change over the summer, as we're going to come on to. And yeah, it just felt like a bit of a release of all the frustration of this season, that finally in this last game that the pressure was off a bit and Newcastle could play with a bit more freedom. And particularly in that first 30 minutes, what impressed me most was it looked like Eddie Howe and Newcastle side at their best, and that they were quick in attack, they were direct, they were incisive. And actually, one thing which I noticed, which they haven't had a lot of, and maybe this is where having the likes of Nick Voldemada, Jacob Ramsey in the side could really help them, they had technical quality and they passed the ball very well, and they haven't done that certainly enough away from home or really at key points this season. So yeah,
it's an interesting point you make there, because if you think back to this season, obviously Newcastle competing on four fronts, and you know, something that we've talked about a lot, that sense of there being no gimme fixture or no fixture where you can take your foot off the accelerator a little bit. Every game has had something on it. And then really it's actually only now, when the game doesn't have anything on it from a Newcastle United perspective, that they actually play in a way that we can sort of recognise and relate to. And it was enjoyable, some really good performances across the pitch, and some, you know, some emotional moments, but also some really exciting bits too, as you sort of turn your mind ahead to the summer. And who would have thought it, that like this season that started with Newcastle having a striker who was refusing to train or play, all this existential angst about Alexander Isak and what happens to the team moving forward, they've ended it with Willa Sula up front scoring 5 goals in his last 6 games and looking every inch like the kind of modern Premier League centre forward.
Yeah, I mean, Howe was asked a lot afterwards about sort of change moving forward and the team, how different it'll look this year. And one of his answers that he gave, he did actually say, I think that the team changed a lot, basically fundamentally, when Isak left. And that is true. And Newcastle have been searching really all season for the answer. Is Willa Sula the long-term answer? I think there still is a question mark there, but he certainly has made as strong a case as he possibly could from the opportunities he's had over the course of the last few weeks. He's adding more to his all-round game. There's still so much more to come, but he theoretically has a bit of everything. He's tall, he's quick, he has very good feet. He's starting to be a bit more tactically savvy, I think. He's starting to bring his teammates in a bit more, particularly when you can get him in behind a defence. He's lethal and causes so many problems. And he took both of his goals extremely well. And so, yeah, 5 and 6 is a very good return. The sort of change in system, I doubted last week whether it suited him. Today it did suit him a bit more, having that person playing just off him. He looked a bit more comfortable there, and having sort of bodies in and around him, people to play off. And yeah, Newcastle could have sold him on the deadline day last summer. I think at the time, a lot of us, including myself, would have thought that's a good financial deal. Now, 12 months on, it looks like Newcastle may have a player there, either someone who, if they were to sell him this summer, they could get hopefully substantially more than they were going to do last year, but equally they may be looking at it and thinking, actually, this, if he's not first choice next season, then he really is a very good option to have to play across that front line.
What did you make of his Michael Jackson glove celebration?
I mean, I hadn't seen it at the time, I only saw it afterwards. A bit odd, but you know, each to their own. If that's what he wants to do in that moment, if that's how he wants to celebrate, then fair enough, I suppose. You know, you've had Jonas Gutierrez getting his Spider-Man mask. You've had various other sort of celebrations where people bring on little props. So the thing with the Sula previously was he would do things like that, and you think he hasn't done enough of it on the pitch to show it. If he's scoring goals, then you can get away with celebrations like that, and he can basically, if he wants to celebrate in that fashion, then as long as he keeps putting the ball in the back of the net.
You truly hate life, don't you?
I do. I mean, I'm going to be... Let's come on. I'm going to take a slight diversion here. I think it's raining on us now, but I'm going to take a slight diversion and sort of say that as emotional as today was, and nice in many ways, I wasn't a massive fan of Trippier speaking on the pitch before the game, as I was clear to you at the time, and I'm just going to say now I realise big party pooper, and it was great, and I'm pleased he had a big send-off, but I just thought it was slightly odd. And I mean, in hindsight, the way that the game turned out, it wasn't like...
Didn't do anybody any harm.
But at that point, 15 minutes before the game, I was just thinking, if there was something really riding on this from a Newcastle perspective, would this be happening? Almost certainly not. But it was very nice, and the Warfags display was exceptional.
Yeah, so the game starts, or I suppose the afternoon starts, with Trippier getting a guard of honour from his Newcastle teammates, as you say, about a quarter of an hour before kickoff, and he was then interviewed. And then, yeah, as the game started, there's that War Flags banner or series of banners in the East Stand, and the phrase "Forever a Newcastle United legend, thank you for the memories." A lovely moment for a truly transformative Newcastle United player. Please keep an ear out for our Extra Time show this week. We've got a very special Kieran Trippier tribute coming your way, with contributions from the man himself, from Dan Byrne, from Amanda Staveley, from Eddie Howe, and others too.
One of those messaged you during the game, didn't they, to basically say that...
Well, in fact, yes, Amanda Staveley messaged me as he came off, as he got substituted, saying what an amazing moment. I mean, floods of tears. But that's very Amanda Staveley for you, still feeling it to her core. It was great to see Trippier doing all the things that we've seen him do in his 4.5 years here. He was still directing the back four. He was the one pointing and telling everybody what to do and to calm down or to get up the pitch and stuff. And he will be missed. I spoke to him briefly afterwards in the mix zone area, and just that leadership, that willingness to front up in good moments, bad moments, and just be that sort of figurehead for a team, for a club, is really valuable. Yes, I mean, he's played a lot of football this season, more than you would have anticipated, I'd have thought, but just that presence is going to be a big, big miss.
Very much so, and Newcastle are going to lose a lot of leadership and experience this summer. Kraft is going as well. He hasn't been a first-team regular by any stretch. He's barely played this season due to injuries, but behind the scenes, he's someone who drives professional standards. Fabian Schär may well be leaving. Someone who's been a mainstay of the defence throughout most of the Eddie Howe era offers that sort of point of difference. And it is going to be a new team moving forward, and people have to step up. And there was a young core to that side today in sort of key positions, and you do feel that they need augmented in certain ways. But yeah, Trippier is the effect that he's had on this football club and everyone associated with it is there for all to see. And yeah, he will be remembered as that transformative figure. But now it's about building beyond that and seeing where Newcastle can go next, because realistically, he probably should have gone sooner than now. So as huge as it is that he's been here for 4.5 years, realistically, if Newcastle were and are going to kick on, then a 36-year-old Kieran Trippier should not have started as many games as he has done this season. So that's the brutal truth of and reality of trying to be an elite club, trying to challenge at the top of the Premier League. And that's where they need to evolve and move on.
When we got to the ground today, we had our usual sort of little debrief and about what we thought might happen. I did say I think Newcastle will win comfortably.
You did, fairness.
I think that was probably just based on the sort of general vibey, you know, good-natured feeling, positivity, emotion and things like that. What I did not expect was West Ham to be as poor as they were. I mean, I thought that, you know, it was a game for them, absolutely had to win, had to try and win, with Spurs 2 points above them and playing Chelsea on Tuesday. They just had to get a positive result out of this match, and really they needed to win. And like, afterwards, you've got West Ham fans singing "You're not fit to wear the shirt." You've got Nuno Espirito Santo agreeing with that assessment. But you know, they turned up in body, but they did not turn up at all as a football team. I could not believe the way they played or didn't play in that match.
No, and Roisin Thomas, our West Ham reporter, was saying to me, basically when the game started, I don't know why he started with a back three, a back five, whatever you call it. They'd done it last week, but that was in a slightly different circumstances. Generally, they've played 4-4-2 and looked good. And as soon as they did switch to 4-4-2, they were clearly better, and so they had their first shots on target, which was like the 25th minute or whatever it was. But they looked timid. They were second to just about everything, particularly in midfield. I mean, particularly when they were playing five at the back, Bruno had so much space in midfield and just ran the game, was playing passes through the lines. And it was weird that they had three centre-halves, and basically that meant that they weren't actually picking up anyone. So Asula was like dragging them from side to side, and then Newcastle sort of flew with three behind them in Voldemort, Ramsey and Barnes did very well to just to keep moving them across the pitch. And so then West Ham did change, but by that stage it was already game over. Newcastle were ahead, and West Ham don't score enough goals and don't have the confidence to be able to fight back in that position. And so, yeah, it was very poor. I mean, Jared Bowen has been wonderful for West Ham, was anonymous. Somerville, who's been in good form recently, didn't really get in the game at all. And so Newcastle deserve a lot of credit for that. But I also think, yeah, West Ham were, I mean, they just look at like a side destined for relegation.
It is an interesting sort of insight into tension or pressure, because there was tension in West Ham's body language and the way they played, and you know, make it the way that they sort of made those unforced errors. You know, the first goal, obviously, and as you say, from that moment they were done. I mean, that was it. That was finished. And because of that, there was actually no tension in the game. It was a game absolutely free of tension from Newcastle's perspective, and they took advantage.
I am going to describe that first goal, though.
You must. I will insist. But sort of what's interesting about that is if you switch identities and think back to the number of times Newcastle have played at St James's, and away from home, but have played this season, you're watching them thinking, who is this team of strangers? It's like they can't put passes together. Where is the impetus? Where's the pace? Where's the pressing? Doing all those things that come naturally. And you actually, you know, we got to see it the other way around with West Ham, that, you know, a team can become so insipid when they just don't have belief or confidence, or they make one mistake and then everything goes away. Like in the past, we would have made a joke about Newcastle going 1-0 up and then, you know, putting themselves under massive pressure because they don't know how to keep a lead. But they, you know, it was just flipped the other way around. It was just so interesting, that.
Yeah, and I think there's a few bits to that. There is the psychological impact of pressure. I think with Newcastle, how talked about the Arsenal game being important for sort of a turning point. There's the change in system, which came about just then. So is it a 4-2-3-1? Is it a 4-1-4-1 almost? Voldemort has been in the number 10, so last couple of games, Willock was there beforehand. And Newcastle look better for it in attack, partly because of that. And yeah, I think also being on the training pitch, and clearly it didn't immediately happen immediately after the national break. And a lot of the response, understandably, from some fans was, well, the idea was meant to be that when we get back on the training pitch. But you've seen over time that muscle memory, almost repeated bits that you're doing on the training pitch, come out in the game. But for the first goal, and the lineup itself was intriguing in the sense that Voldemort theoretically is a number 9, can play as a number 10, can play in both. So is he out of position as a number 10? You then have Jacob Ramsey, who's a midfielder but has played on the left a lot for Aston Villa. He's playing on the left. And then Harvey Barnes, who's theoretically a left winger but is playing on the right, and even though Anthony Gordon's not in the side, he still haven't got Harvey Barnes in as a left winger. It did feel a bit curious in that sense, but it worked, certainly for that first goal. And it was the West Ham goalkeeper tries to play the ball out to Debo at sort of like left-sided centre-half, and he overhits the pass ahead of him, but then Debo sort of realises that, starts to go forward, but then hesitates. And it's that sort of, I assume it's that double, that second guessing you have of yourself.
Yeah, you're second guessing yourself.
Yeah. And so Barnes is just there to it quicker, flicks the ball beyond him, gets down the right, and then there is no challenge to him whatsoever. He almost like saunters into the box. It's really, really weird when you watch it back how much space he has. And he like lifts, it's not really a cross, it's sort of like a lifted pass into Voldemort, who stood 8-10 yards out and has the easiest volley he's ever gonna score, which for him felt like a big moment. And it was his first Premier League goal since he scored twice against Chelsea here on December 20th, first in 17 Premier League games. I think only 8 of those being starts, but that's big for him. He did show more moments again, and I still think there's more to come from him. But again, as that number 10, Howe spoke about we've got him the ball more and getting him into those positions, and I do think he has looked more comfortable all round play in that position than I think he has done the last few times I've seen him at centre forward, albeit that hasn't been recently.
Yeah, more comfortable, I think more robust, I think more physically understanding the league and the demands put on him. And again, all of that is going to get better, is going to improve, fingers crossed. So I agree with you, a big moment for him and a very nice moment for him. And there was another one for Newcastle 4 minutes later, so while you're on your roll, carry on.
Well, I don't think I can do that goal justice, having not seen it back enough times, because it was a wonderful goal going from back to front. So I can't remember every single person who was involved in it, but Bruno Guimarães was heavily involved in it. And Newcastle, yeah, do go from back to front. It comes from the centre-backs, goes forward. Bruno plays it out to the right. Eventually, he gets it back, plays it out to Jacob Ramsey, who switched across from the left-hand side to be on the right. And Ramsey, first time, then plays a wonderful right-footed pass to break in behind, as I mentioned, the three centre-backs, who were just almost non-existent. Willa Sula, who'd already done a dummy at one stage and got beyond them and had a shot which had deflected out for a corner. He then gets played in, can just take it in stride, one touch, left-hand side of the box, and then play it sort of under the keeper who was coming out. Took it really well. Very, very well-worked goal. And when I talk about that sort of back-to-front, direct, incisive play, that's Newcastle at their best under Howe. We've seen at certain points it's taken on different strands, and the way Newcastle have done it, depending on personnel, has been different. But you could see it there. That's when Newcastle are at their best. They attack you right at the heart, and that's exactly what they did. It was a sweeping move, and it was a really well-taken goal.
And it was done. It was done. At that point, as you say...
That was only 19 minutes in.
Yeah, it was done. And at that point, or not too long afterwards, Nuno does make a change, brings on Castellanos, I think it was, and they go to four at the back. And there's an immediate uptick. Nick Pope has to make two really good saves in short succession. But it was never under threat, was it? It didn't feel like that to me. And Newcastle get to half time, still 2-0, and then Asula makes it 3. And again, at that, we could have just all gone home at that point.
Yeah, so Tonali goes off with what turns out to be a hamstring injury. Howe said he didn't think it was serious, but he went off, and Willock came on, and it was interesting seeing Willock in sort of initially in that two as it was, but then it sort of evolved as the system went on, and he wins the ball from it. Nick Pope actually kicks the ball directly out of play. Maybe that was the game plan all along. Maybe this is what they've been trying to do, you know, give the ball back to the opposition. And so Nick Pope kicks the ball out of play, and then Diouf takes the throw-in inside. And is it Pablo just come on? I think it was. It's not a great throw-in, but he doesn't really react with his touch. Willock gets in ahead of him, plays it inside to Asula, gets it back from Asula, right-hand side the box that he is, and pulls it back, and Asula then finishes well. And yeah, it's comfortable. The two of them did a bow celebration to one another. If we're going to bring celebrations into it, they clearly have a bit of a connection. And yeah, suddenly that sparked West Ham into a little bit of life as well.
I mean, I had my head down for their goal, but what a finish that was.
Yeah, speaking of goal kicks, that was just, yeah, that was literally lofted forward from the goalkeeper. Wilson and Botman had sort of both come ahead to try and compete for the ball. Neither of them got it. It bounced once. And then Castellanos, who had quite a few opportunities for them, looked very dangerous when he came on. First time, lifts the ball over Nick Pope, who clearly wasn't expecting it and was off his line, and it gave them a bit of life, and they had a few opportunities after that. West Ham, they did unsettle Newcastle. I mean, Newcastle just can't keep a clean sheet still. That's still, I think it's 1 in 23 games now, 1 in 15 Premier League matches. They've not kept a clean sheet at St James's Park in the Premier League since Crystal Palace at the start of January, so there is still a concern there. They do still have a lot to work on in that regard. But by that stage, it was always going to take something incredible for West Ham to fight back. And he never really, even though they had those opportunities, never really felt they fully had it in them to claw it back.
And it wasn't played at a testimonial pace by Newcastle at all. They were pushing, they were aggressive. There was quite an interesting moment that you'd kind of spotted. Joe Willock and Bruno having a bit of a ding-dong with each other, but, you know...
Yeah, I mean, Bruno had been getting wound up anyway. I mean, he had the issue with Souček as well, where Souček had shoved him to the ground and then Bruno had grabbed the ball and Souček had kicked it twice, but clearly kicked him as well as the ball. But then, yeah, him and Willock and Willock had tried to sort of cross the ball from the left-hand side and it had been blocked, whereas there may have been a pass back to Bruno, and seemingly Bruno must have said something to him, and then Joe Willock just kept on telling him to basically where to go, was using the F-word quite a lot. Dan Bernhardt intervened, both of them were sort of quite irate, which is interesting given that at that point in the game, obviously, it's completely done, but in some ways I think that's also good because it shows that this did mean something to them as well, though, that they wanted to sign off with a win. Willock, it may be goodbye to as well. Was that Joe Willock's last appearance at St James's Park? You very much suspect so. He's going the last year of his deal. And it's a shame in some ways, because you have over the last few weeks seen what he can bring when he's at his best. Probably haven't seen enough of that over the last couple of years due to injuries and just loss of form. But it was a sort of strange ending in that regard.
But I totally agree with you. I mean, I think I'm very happy to see that. I mean, clearly I don't want it to be Boya Dia all over again, that kind of thing. But teammates demanding more from each other and reacting like that when they're winning, I mean, I think that's a good sign. And, you know, Bruno was magnificent again in that match. I thought he
certainly first half an hour, I just thought he just ran the game.
He ran the game, he controlled it, and, you know, did all the things you'd want your captain to do. It was quite funny because Trippier came onto the pitch wearing the captain's armband, so he'd kind of been given the captaincy, and then before the game actually started, he gave the armband back to Bruno. So that was kind of just a little sort of strange thing. But and there is that sort of handing over of the baton, if you want. I mean, if you know, it wasn't that long ago when Bruno gets the armband, gets the captaincy, and you're wondering about whether that can work, whether he's captaincy material, you know, whether he's just been given that as a kind of sop because he hadn't left the club, you know, to make him feel a bit loved and happy and things like that. But I mean, he is a proper captain now, isn't he?
Oh, he is. And the of all of the change that you could see coming this summer, the player who's irreplaceable is Bruno. And he is the heartbeat of the side. They are transformed with him. So another reason why there's been that uptake late in the season as well is Bruno's back. Now, I know he was there for large spells of it, but when Newcastle really were struggling either side of the international break, well, just before the international break, that's when Bruno wasn't in the side. And that's when... And you just see the lift that he gives you, the difference that he makes. And just on the sort of players who sort of could be leaving, Anthony Gordon, third straight game, he's on the bench. Third straight game, he didn't come on. Slightly odd afterwards in that, and you can read into these things too much sometimes, but the sort of lack of appreciation afterwards, he sort of held back. He didn't follow the others around. He was playing with a ball with his daughter and other kids and sort of standing back from it. He then sort of almost sheepishly joined the very side of the squad and family photo. He then did wave to the Gallagher end, and there were a few chants of the Anthony Gordon song, but certainly not as loud and not as persistent as certainly the Kieran Trippier ones, which were the loudest. There were Eddie Howe ones, but there was Emil Kraft ones, there was Fabian Scher, there was even Sandro Tonali ones. So it did feel there like that was him almost sort of conspicuously almost trying to go back into the shadows, as in this is him leaving out the back door sort of thing.
It has been a weird thing. I was at Howe's press conference on Friday, in which he was asked again about Gordon and about him not featuring, as you mentioned, and, you know, he was asked very directly whether that was with an eye to the future, which is something he'd said after recent matches. But, you know, he doubled down on it. He said, yeah, he's coming back from an injury, and blah blah blah, but yes, it's with one eye to the future. So that's, and you know, he was asked whether kind of discussions were going on, and he sort of said, not with me, but I'm sure there'll be discussions happening around the place. So it was the clearest possible indication that you can get that, all things being equal, Anthony Gordon won't be here next season. So, you know, you started the show talking about change and the change to come and ending of an era. Yeah, it's been peculiar because, you know, how did say again on Friday that if necessary Gordon could play, but he's shown no indication of actually doing it. So he's there only really as a backup, which makes it a very strange way for his Newcastle career to end, if that's what it does. You know, we talked last week about this idea of looking to the future, and so Kieran Trippier had come out of the team, he then comes back into the team, you know, for this game, albeit, you know, there aren't a lot of right backs knocking about. But so it's been a sort of strange few matches, it feels to me. But Newcastle have found form. It's taken them a long time, but
three games unbeaten,
and, you know, if you add in Arsenal to that, then, you know, there's been an uptick since then. So they're ending the season with a bit of form. You know what?
What took them
so long?
Well, exactly. And just on the sort of change that's come this summer, Howe was asked afterwards about Would it be a different side come the start of next season? And he sort of, for the first time, I think really admitted that there will be quite a lot of upheaval. He hasn't pushed back on that idea, but he did talk about it. But he also said that if Newcastle do sell players, they need to bring in better. And he said, we have to be stronger as a squad going into next year, which was sort of his message at the back end of last season as well, in the last press conference here. And that obviously didn't come to pass and has to be different this summer. But I also then asked how about the fact that he has become, we haven't discussed this, he's become the using the terrible American phrase, the most winningest manager in Newcastle's Premier League history.
So I don't think you have to say most winningest. I think you just say winningest.
Do you? I don't know. Well, the
winningest means most winning.
Okay, well, the winningest then.
That's awful. Right. I'm not prepared to be your friend anymore now that you've used that.
That was his 84th. Victory as in the Premier League as Newcastle manager, which overtakes 83 that Kevin Keegan in his first spell and Sir Bobby Robson had. He's 10 games shy, I think, of Sir Bobby Robson in terms of actual Premier League matches managed, so he's second in that list for Newcastle, but he is ahead of the two of them. So that in itself is an achievement and shows partly his longevity, but also the success generally that he's had since he's taken charge. So I asked him about that stat and how that hearing that makes him feel, because he didn't know about it, and then he asked me to repeat the second part of the question because clearly I butchered it so much. But then the second part of the question, which was about does he still have the drive and desire to kick on from that and keep setting records at Newcastle, and this is what he said.
Yeah, I mean, I think individual accolades are always surprising to me because I don't seek them and I don't record them, or so when you hit me with something like that, it feels really nice because it's not something I'm aware of. Certainly when we arrived, if you'd have said that, you know, put me in this seat a few years later, I wouldn't have believed that would have happened. So I'm very, very grateful to have had the journey that we've had. I want to produce a team that the supporters really identify with, and I want to produce a team that they love coming to see. And I think we've pretty much been that. I think there's been at times this season, maybe we've dropped below that. So I think that's the big thing, that the supporters to love the players to love the supporters. For me, they're two key things.
So, yeah, I think again that he didn't return to the fire still burning and I've got the wood piled up analogy, but he was basically saying he wants to deliver a side that excites fans and gets them bums off seats. And so let's hope that's what it can be going next season. He made a big point again about the fans being behind him, and he said that's number one for him, and we've spoken about this before, that it feels like for him to succeed there needs to be that unity, and that has just about held to the back end of the season and the uplift they've had. He talked about how important this win was. So yeah, bit of momentum going in the summer. Hopefully they're back on up at Fulham, but that belated momentum eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. It needed it. It felt, yeah, as you say, three or four weeks ago, it felt like a very, very angsty place. And, you know, a lot of questions being asked of him, asked of the players, needing to see some sort of response, needing to see something in these last few games of the season. It didn't go to plan straight away post-Sunderland. In fact, it got worse. And, you know, I think at that point, it did feel like the club was on sort of knife edge territory. But they have responded. The season ends, well, it hasn't ended yet, obviously.
Because
I have to go to fucking Fulham. Yeah. But, you know, hopefully they can carry it on there. It didn't feel after Crystal Palace and those matches that Newcastle would get to this point and for it to be largely free of tension, but it is. And, so today felt like a nice occasion. It has been a really tough, long, draining season, but there was some nice emotion there at the end of it.
There was, and yeah, Newcastle signed it off, and I signed off my season here. So I passed the baton on to you, George, to go down to Fulham.
Yeah, the kind of reverse trip here. Because you're a lot younger than me, so I don't understand how that works. This isn't with one eye to the future, is it?
No, this is like your I don't know. This is maybe a second bit, like
second wind
for you. Yeah,
is that what you're trying to say?
Trying to say
you've run out of words.
Yeah, well, that's my season.
You've just done. You've just finished. Yeah, that's it. And your mouth and brain have just stopped completely working. Right. Okay. Well, you will feature in our output next week, but it'll be me at Fulham. Please have a listen out for Extra Time, and we'll have a midweek pod too, and then yes, I will be at Fulham. So thank you for listening.
So clearly an emotional day for many reasons, with Newcastle grabbing 3 points. Is Europe still on? Who knows at this point? I've got no idea. If you've not subscribed to our Extra Time service, please visit podinthetime.supportandcast.fm, where you can hear our recent special episode where Dan Byrne talks mental health, cup wins, and getting better at 34 with our very own George. For £5 a month, you get access to all of our back catalogue of specials, matchday pods, and documentaries as well. And if that's not value, then I don't know what is. Thanks again for listening to this matchday episode. And from everybody at Pod on the Time, take care. Goodbye.